This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
A one line into center field. That's going to get down in a base hit. Xander Bogaerts, an RBI single to bring home the first run of 2024. And the Padres lead the Dodgers 1-0.
But alas, there will be no undefeated season for the Friars. Welcome into Gwynn and Chris, everybody. Happy Wednesday to you. 2:01 is the time. Chris Ello, Matt Scraby together in our Odyssey Palace studios. Tony Gwynn Jr., of course, sleeping off the Padres' 5-2 loss to the Los Angeles Dodgers in Seoul, South Korea earlier this morning. Goes without saying, Scraby, unbelievable turnout this morning at Seven Mile Casino, an event sponsored by our friends at Soapy Joe's, I might add.
Yes.
I mean, I couldn't find a place to park. I was there 15 minutes before the game. I thought I'd just, you know, pull up to the front door and walk in and find a place to sit.
Not true.
I had to park down the street. I had to walk. I actually parked at the 12-mile casino and walked into the 7-mile casino. I mean, that's how far away my car was. And then I got inside, and a nice lady named Karen said she was saving a seat for her friend.
Oh.
That's the only way I got a seat. She let me sit there.
Wait,
until
you took someone's seat?
Well, she said I could, you know, she said I could sit there until her friend arrived. Her friend never arrived, or at least as far as I know. Oh. So I was able to sit down and watch some of the game, at least the first few innings, and I started mingling around. And I tell you, it was, you know, just a tribute to San Diego sports fans, Padre fans. I mean, we get the bad rap here that we don't have good sports fans. We have great sports fans in San Diego. We just don't have enough teams to root for at the major league level.
Yeah.
We didn't lose the Chargers. Don't blame any of us fans for the Chargers exiting. You know?
I'm not.
Don't blame us fans for the fact that the Clippers were, at the time, and might even still be a little bit, one of the worst organizations in sports history.
That was Donald Sterling's
fault. Run by Donald Sterling and run out of town by Donald Sterling. Not because the fans were no good, because Donald Sterling lived in Beverly Hills and he wanted his team to be closer to him. He wasn't concerned with anything else. He wanted the Hollywood life. That had nothing to do with the fans losing the Clippers. And you can even go back to the San Diego Rockets, the first NBA franchise here.
Yeah, what happened with them?
They did well. They did really well. The owner of the team was a guy by the name of Bob Breitbart, who I got to know much later on.
I know that last name.
He was, he's the guy that built the sports arena, basically, okay, in 1965, 66, whenever it was built. Brought the Gulls in originally. That was the first tenant in the sports arena in the old Western Hockey League. And then got the the Rockets as a expansion franchise. And what happened with the Rockets, they were well supported. I think they got into a playoff one year. They had the Big E, Elvin Hayes, was one of the great stars in the NBA back then. Bob Breitbart owned the team, and he got an offer. He told me the story many years later. He got an offer from the city of Houston. You notice how I have to pause before I say that every time now?
I'm not going to call you out.
So that you won't say, oh, you always say Houston.
Houston.
I don't. I say Houston.
Okay.
But he got an offer from the city of Houston, and I'm just using examples here. Let's say the Rockets were worth $5 million back in 1971 or whatever.
Yeah.
They were, you know, the book value was, let's say, $5 million. I don't know what it was. Let's say it was $5 million. The city of Houston, the owners there, the Rockets, people who wanted the franchise to move, offered him like $25 million. It was just, he couldn't pass it up. And he told me till the day he died that he felt like that was one of the biggest regrets he ever had. But he, at the time, it was too absurd of an offer. You know?
Yeah, it's a tough place to be in because it sounds like you wanted to keep him there, but how do you say
he
no?
He had no real desire to move them. He just got offered so much money, whatever it was at the time, that, you know, he made the decision to sell and the Rockets moved. And then the Clippers came in soon thereafter. And it was, anyway, you get my point here. We've got great fans in San Diego, and you guys showed up big time this morning. Talking to Brad Samuel down there, who works at 7 Mile Casino, and he said his estimate, it wasn't even an estimate. He said they can tell. They keep track. There was over 350 people there
for
this game.
I didn't think it was 350.
I expected there'd be 75, maybe 100.
I thought, you know, I really didn't know what to expect, but all of you just exceeded expectations.
Oh, fantastic.
To the point where I literally felt bad and was apologizing to people walking out because I'm like, I'm sorry, everybody.
That was the example of how many people were there that a lot of people got there, couldn't find a place to settle in, and turned around and went home. It was so jam-packed. It was such a wonderful event. You know, you guys made it that way.
Yeah.
That we just couldn't fit everybody in who wanted to be there.
I thought I was like
so
you.
So great on all of you, man. It was a lot of fun. I met a lot of people today. And you and I were kidding around about this in the back before the show started. 90% of the people who came over and said hello to me today shared a story with me about their appearance on Chris versus the Fans.
Yes,
Do you remember the time the question was?
Or it's like,
and then they would give me the question, and I'd go, "Oh, sure, I remember that. Yeah, oh yeah." Or they would give me their record. They go, "I've been on Chris versus the Fans 4 times. I've lost 2."
Yeah.
Everybody wanted to share a Chris versus the Fans story.
It's true.
So it was a lot of fun getting to talk to everybody out there. And just thank all of you folks for coming out. Thanks to 7 Mile Casino for hosting us. And, you know, everything was perfect about 3:00 this morning, except, of course, the result.
Yeah.
Which was 5-2 Dodgers. Scraby, here's the thing. When I think of the phrase foul play, I think of a few things. I think of there was a movie named Foul Play with Chevy Chase and Goldie Hawn.
Okay, never seen it.
Quite a good movie.
Oh, okay.
I highly recommend it. You'd like it. It was good. It was set in San Francisco. It's kind of a murder mystery adventure type thing. It was really good.
Now you've got me.
And it was funny. It was a hilarious movie as well. It was funny and it was, anyway, Chevy Chase, Foul Play. Look it up.
Okay.
The other thing I think of is a ball that's hit into foul territory.
Yes.
Otherwise known as a foul play.
Yes.
Or I think of what in the world happened to Jake Cronenworth's glove.
Right.
Was it foul play?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you think
Chris,
so?
I absolutely think so.
You think there was
so.
Foul play. Why? You know what? You are the number one conspiracy theory guy that I've ever met. So why don't you tell me your theory on how...
Got this ready to go every time.
Tell me your theory on what in the world happened on Gavin Lux's ground ball that mysteriously went right through the glove of Jake Cronenworth and basically decided the game today.
It did.
You can look at all of the other things you want to. The Padres pitchers walked 9 batters. They hit one. They put too many guys on. Padres didn't hit a whole lot. You know, but they were 2-for-5, by the way, with runners in scoring position. I want to point that out.
That's brilliant.
Which is good. That's a 400 average. I hope that holds up. But, you know, Camposano had the big chance, really, in the 4th inning. Bases loaded, nobody out. Hit one into the gap there. You got to break it open.
Gave me flashbacks.
Yeah. Double play. 1 run scored, but missed a chance to score more. Wade made a throwing error, which led to an unearned run. You can put all that stuff in there. All of that, to me, is baseball. That was all part of baseball.
Okay.
But the one thing that happened that decided the game was not baseball. A ground ball went through the guy's glove.
It did.
And they showed it from multiple different angles. That's exactly what happened. So, under the category of foul play, what do you say happened, Mr. Scraby?
Here's what I think happened, Chris.
You think?
Yes.
I want you to know.
I am proposing.
You're proposing.
This theory.
Turn the music up a little bit. Make it as eerie as possible.
So Jake Cronenworth goes back into the dugout.
After the seventh inning. Now, understand that when he went back into the dugout in the seventh inning, after the seventh inning, probably put his glove somewhere,
yeah.
right, to go retrieve it.
Mm-hmm.
Up until that point, he had caught the ball. He had thrown infield every inning.
Yep.
He had caught a lot of throws Kim and from Bogarts.
All game long.
All game long. His glove was working perfectly well.
It was.
There was no sign, obviously, that there had been anything wrong with that glove or Jake would have changed it. But he, obviously, when he put his glove down at the end of the seventh inning, the glove was in perfect condition.
Perfect condition.
So what could have happened between then and that ground ball by Gavin Lux in the eighth inning?
Now, I don't have any names because I'm not willing to go that far yet.
Okay.
But what I think happened...
Because the Dodgers don't have Jose Altuve or Carlos Correa on their roster.
Correct. That is
so
true.
We can't blame those guys.
Don't take my shirt off.
We can't blame those guys. But,
we can't.
But
we
somehow,
can't.
Some way... You feel like there might have been some foul play involved.
The only thing, and Annie Halpern brought this up on Andy and Elston earlier. She's calling it Glovegate, and I know that Annie
Glovegate.
I know that Annie might be joking a little bit. I am not joking.
I don't think you need to joke about
because
it. Glovegate is a real thing.
It's ridiculous. So this is what I think happened, Chris. Somehow, someone got a hold of that glove in between innings and loosened the webbing. How does this happen? What was this, the eighth inning? How does this happen in the eighth inning?
After seven innings of perfectly good glove work by Jake Cronenworth, and even if he didn't have a lot of plays in the field in the first seven innings, and I don't have that in front of me, how many, you know, ground, buddy. I know he picked up a couple of ground balls. I'm sure he caught some throws at first base.
Yeah.
But keep in mind, they throw infield grounders, first baseman every inning.
Yeah.
So he's catching, fielding throws at the beginning of every inning.
He always looks at his glove, too. He's always tightening his glove.
I'm assuming that before the eighth inning, he threw ground balls to the infield and made catches on throws then.
Yeah.
So how did this happen?
Gavin Lux is that strong?
No, he's not. Gavin Lux did not hit a ground ball that ripped through the webbing of his glove because it was struck so hard. Somebody tampered with that glove.
I have seen on the chat that some people think this is the glove that's been passed around for generations in that dugout. But that doesn't make sense because Jake Cronenworth's a lefty. Does he catch right?
No, he's right-handed.
He's right-handed.
He throws right.
Okay.
He catches
with
his left hand.
So that makes sense then because I think some people were thinking it was
No.
Basically what it comes
down to, he
needs to buy a new glove.
Well, they gave him a new glove after the play. But it was a little late.
It was an 87-mile-an-hour hit. That's not nearly hard enough to go through a glove.
Not even remotely hard enough to go through a glove. It had to be tampered with. Somebody, somewhere, either maybe one of the Dodger players, and I don't see how one of the Dodgers could get into the dugout.
No, it's not the Dodger player.
But I could see how one of those Korean cheerleaders might have dropped in for a moment.
Oh, you're saying
you see them all over the dugout during the game?
I really don't know what happened.
It's a trick of the gods is what it is. It is absolutely something that I honestly have never seen happen before. I've been watching baseball for years. You know how old I am, Scrape.
Yeah, you're 102.
I've never seen a ball. I've seen it go off the the webbing, I've seen it bounce. I've never seen it actually go through a hole in somebody's glove
like that. And then him just look
I've seen balls get stuck in the webbing before.
Yeah.
A hard ball to the pitcher, and they'll throw the whole glove
to the
first baseman because the ball will be stuck in the glove.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never seen a ball go through a glove. And this is, what cost the Padres the game. That was the game. He turns a double play. It stays 2-2. Going to the bottom of the eighth, and who knows what happens. But, right after that, Betts got the hit, Otani got the hit, 5-2, game over. But that should have never happened.
I actually think I know what happened, Chris. It was a drunk Rob Manfred in the dugout.
Stumbling around. Jake, is this your glove?
Yeah, he's like hitting it like he's going in. And
is
then
this
he
your
somehow
glove? He unties
the
webbing.
Web. Yes.
You're blaming it on Rob Manfred.
Yes.
I, you know what? Look, everybody's
being,
upset that
we're
we lost.
Jokesters.
Everybody's upset that they lost this game. We lost this game. But this was a trick of the gods. That's all I can say. Maybe it's something that can only happen to a San Diego-based team. I don't know. But the Dodgers lucked out, and the ball got through the glove, and the game has belonged to L.A. 5-2, the final. One more thing on Glovegate.
Mm-hmm.
Or not one more. I'm sure we'll talk more about it. But one last thing for this segment on Glovegate. Hello, Major League Baseball. That is not an error on Jay Cronenworth.
Oh, you don't think so?
No.
Well, isn't
how
it
can you give him an error, when he
isn't the equipment an extension of him?
How can you give the guy an error on a ball that he gloved perfectly well and it went through? Now, had it hit a rock and bounced over his head, you wouldn't give him an error.
No,
that'd be
wouldn't.
A hit.
But
I don't think that's an error.
I think the equipment is an extension of you.
That's a trick of the gods. There should be a separate category. The Dodgers.
Oh, the error category and the trick Dodger, of the gods
the
category.
The Dodgers line score should read 5 runs, 6 hits, no errors, and 1 trick of the gods. Yes.
Trick. T-O
the gods.
T-G.
T-O-T-G.
T-O-T-G.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Trick of the gods.
Absolutely crazy. All right, so the Padres.
By the way, everybody, we're going to be a little punchy today. So.
Yes, well, hey, we were there at 3 in the morning with everybody else. Yes. But I assume most of you listening are a little punchy as well. Thank you so much for being there. Thank you so much for being here. We are underway. The Padres will not go undefeated this season.
Oh, but the Dodgers will, according to Major League Baseball social media accounts.
Well, they still have a chance, too. So until further notice, I guess that's still on the.
Did Major League Baseball really post that saying that they're going to. They still have a chance to go 162-0. I don't care if it's a joke. I don't care if it was for the Tigers. That is a dumb post.
It's pretty dumb. But as of
no
this.
No one goes 162-0.
But as of this moment, the Rockies still have a chance to go 162-0. So. Although I doubt anybody's going to post that.
No.
On the show today, we got a sports court a little bit later on. But before we get to that, we'll have you get your NCAA brackets out. Sean Paul, Field of 68 website. He is so knowledgeable about college basketball. He'll help us preview the Aztecs game against UAB. He'll help you with your brackets. That's coming up in about 25 minutes. All the rest of the good stuff here on Gwen and Chris, Daily Gambit, Christopher the Fans, the Big Five. A full 4 hours together today. Here on Gwen and Chris, 97.3 The Fan. Welcome to it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We fish our tail off to get to that point. You know, threw together a lot of at-bats, a lot of deep counts, ran through some guys. And, it's a 2-2 game. That's a double play ball. Goes through as well. You know, we're still tied, maybe still playing. So, didn't go our way.
That's an understatement, Mike Schilt. Did not go the Padres' way in an almost unbelievable circumstance. They lost 5-2 to the Dodgers to kick off the 2024 baseball season. Welcome back to Gwen and Chris. Chris Ello, Matt Scraby together today in our Odyssey Palace studios. Tony Gwynn Jr., of course, is halfway around the world. In Korea, he had the call of the game this morning with Jesse Agler, and they will have the call of the game tomorrow morning. Again, how is Sammy Leavitt, huh?
Oh, I listened on the way down.
2 a.m. Padre pregame show. Sammy had all the facts and figures.
Oh, he was
lined
ready
up.
To go.
Oh, he's in midseason form.
He is, and it
mid-season
was 2 a.m.
Sammy Leavitt will have the pregame show at 2 a.m. tomorrow morning. So if you are one of those people, like I used to be, who stayed out till 2 in the morning, I mean, that's a few years ago, Scrabe.
You're telling me.
Yeah, I know. But I used to stay out till 2 in the morning. Then head on home, Watch SportsCenter till 3 a.m. in the morning.
Oh.
And then go to bed.
Party animal.
Yeah.
I used to...
I would have just stayed up and watched the game back in the day. Now I do it the opposite way. I go to bed
sleep,
early
and then you wake,
and wake up and watch the game. Yeah.
Yeah, back in the day, I used to... you know, go out with my friends until 2 a.m. and then show back up to work at 9 a.m. the next day.
And you could pull it off. And you could pull it off.
I don't drink anymore, but I know that me waking up this morning is going to affect me at some point today.
Yeah, probably. It's already, it probably already has started affecting you, being as you believe that Kike Hernandez...
I don't believe this is from the chat.
Used the bomb diversion earlier in the before the game. There was a bomb threat,
which
apparently
is scary.
It is scary. It turned out to be a hoax.
Yeah.
But Scraby now telling me off the air there that he believes.
I was just
after reading the chat. After reading the chat, he believes that the bomb hoax was used as a diversion. And before the game, Kike Hernandez snuck into the Padre clubhouse. I don't know why you're blaming Kike Hernandez, but
he was just
he's
the one
as
that
good
was
as
suggested.
Anybody. He's as good as anybody. And he went in there and loosened the strings on Jake Cronenworth's glove. Now, if that's true, I can imagine Kike Hernandez sitting in the Dodger dugout for 8 innings,
like, what's
wondering
going on?
Why isn't this working?
I sent that email and everything.
Yeah. I mean, I messed with the guy, the strings of the guy's glove. It should give way at any moment.
And then it did.
Bam. It gave way at the worst possible moment for the Padres.
One thing about Sammy Lev before we move on. I met Brandon, our guy from El Cajon, who's also active on the chat. He said that Sammy Lev showed up during the morning show after his post game as well.
That's,
that dude
that's
is
dedication.
Incredible.
That's dedication. Also got to thank Presley from our promotions department.
Oh, yeah.
She was down there like 1 in the morning getting everything set up. Got to thank Adam Klug, our, you know, our boss. I'm not bucking for a promotion here, but he was down there.
I'm sorry? What did you just say?
I said I'm not bucking for
a
promotion.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Adam Klug was down there not only setting it up, but then he was there through the entire event. Then he came back and ran the board for the morning show.
Tell everybody where you met Adam this morning.
Well, when I got back from the game, my wife and I went on our morning walk.
It's interesting.
When I live close by, as you know, so we walked past the station in our morning walk, and we ran into Adam Klug.
Yeah.
Returning from the promotion and getting ready to run the board for Ben and Wood's show. That's the kind of teamwork that, you know, I'm going to say it. I'm proud to be a part of that kind of teamwork.
Me too. Me too.
That's really good. I mean, Adam Klug is our boss. A lot of bosses don't get involved in the day-to-day goings-on of the station like that.
They usually are at home sleeping.
Get their hands dirty,
yes.
As you might say.
Oh, Adam doesn't just get his hands dirty. He is
gets them filthy
on the front lines with all of us.
He not only gets them filthy, but then he wipes it off on our shirts.
Your shirt.
Yeah, on my shirt. But, yeah,
if
so.
You ever need to see Adam, just look for the guy wearing a polo and jeans with the polo tucked in.
Adam Klug, great job. Ben and Woods, everybody, like I said, terrific, terrific promotion this morning. And, you know, unfortunately, the game did not go the Padres' way. You know, it's all about the glove gate. I mean, I think glove gate is a perfect term for it. So I'll give Annie Heilberg credit for that.
Should.
But, you know, it's about that, and you can't walk 9 guys.
No.
You just can't walk 9
oh,
guys.
Oh, yeah, there's that too, Chris.
That's part of it. That's part of it.
It's not because of the 8th inning. It's because of the 9 walks, most likely.
Well, that's a big part of it. I mean, you walk 2 in the 8th inning to set up the bases loaded, right? And then Brito came in, got Kike on that line drive to left field for a sac fly, tied it at 2. You know, and then you bring Mordejón in, and Glovegate happens. But, you know, everybody who pitched today walked somebody practically. The Padres used 8 pitchers. And Mike Shildt said he was going to play this like a playoff game. Why? Not because it's the first game of the season, but because there's only 2 games this week. After tomorrow, everybody gets to reset. So he played it, and I thought he played it right. I thought he managed the bullpen perfectly. I think he had the right guys in there at the right moment. But you can't walk 9. And you can't hit a batter. That's giving the Dodgers 10 free base runners. And the Dodgers are good enough to beat you even with no free base runners, let alone 10.
Absolutely.
So
Matsui
I think that was a big deal.
Too.
Matsui pitched well.
He gotten a chance to see a lot of
Peralta
him.
Walked. Now, 2 of the Padres' 9 walks were pitch clock violations.
Yeah, what in the world?
Including the first batter of the year.
What in the world?
It was like Yu Darvish forgot that the pitch clock existed. The home plate umpire, Lance Barksdale, actually gave him an extra 2 or 3 seconds on top of the clock.
Yeah.
And finally came out from behind home plate and said, sorry, I got to call this.
Yeah.
That's ball four.
You're way over limit.
You're so far over the limit, I have to call this. But yeah, two of the walks were pitch count violations. I thought the other thing that stuck out about the game, after one game this season in Major League Baseball, do you know who leads MLB in extra base hits?
The Padres?
How about nobody?
Oh, no.
There wasn't a single extra base hit in this game.
I didn't realize that.
Neither team had an extra base hit. The Dodgers had 7 singles. The Padres had 4. 2 of them by Xander Bogaerts. One of those with a runner in scoring position. I thought that maybe that was a signal that things are going to change a little this year. But lo and behold, the 8th inning tripped us up. So
we're stuck in this, we have one game to react to type thing.
Yeah, so. What else do you want me to say? I mean,
a lot of people are
overreacting, which I expect, you know.
More people on the chat are okay.
They're doing all right. Yeah. But I read my Twitter stuff this morning, and a lot of people are like, we absolutely positively have to get Brandon Belt. We got to get Tommy Pham signed. We need another bat. First of all, I don't disagree with that notion. But it's not because of this game that I think that.
Yeah, of course.
I think that just in general.
Yeah.
I mean, Fernando, Cronenworth, Machado, and Kim, that's 2 through 5 in your order. They went 0 for 14.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys got to do something.
That is too many shades of last year.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit there and wait for Graham Pauly and even Jackson Merrill to save us. You know, the 4 guys in the middle have got to do something. They did not do anything today. So, all right, 5-2 Dodgers. When we come back, get your brackets out. Colorado State started it off nicely for the Mountain West Conference last night as they beat Virginia. What is likely to happen as the tournament moves forward from here? Sean Paul, Field of 68, college basketball analyst. And we've had him on before. He's really good, really knowledgeable. So, like I said, stick around. That's coming up next. Gravy's alma mater, one of your many alma maters.
Oh, I was like, which one?
Colorado State Rams, my wife's alma mater. They win the first game of the tournament for the Mountain West Conference last night, as we talked about yesterday. Any win that the Mountain West gets is good for the Aztecs. Even though we're used to rooting against those teams during the season, we need to root for them now. It will help down the road.
It will.
And it also helps in the pocketbook. That's $2 million more dollars to the teams in the Mountain West Conference. Every time a team wins a game, ching ching, couple more million.
Ching, I think is what
or
you're looking for.
Ching. What'd I say? Ching ching?
Ching ching.
Yeah, well, you know. But I want to also congratulate both Colorado State and Virginia. They set the game back by about 30 years. If you watched the first half of that game last night, it was a struggle.
I did.
It was an absolute struggle. The shooting for both teams was abysmal. Virginia at one point missed 19 shots in a row. They went over 11 minutes without a basket. And
it's pretty bad.
I would think Colorado State would win that game. Now, of course, all the pundits after the game are like, we told Virginia shouldn't have been in the tournament. All right, fine.
Easy to say now.
But how about a little credit to Colorado State? They played a terrific game. They didn't give a whole lot to Virginia. They didn't give them anything on the offensive glass. And, you know, they forced them into difficult shots. And Colorado State, I mean, having watched this team as much as we have, Isaiah Stevens is like one of the best players out there. This guy scored 5 points last night.
And they still won
by 25.
That's impressive.
Pretty impressive. So with that, we bring in our NCAA basketball guru from the Field of 68. Joining us on Gwen and Chris is our friend Sean Paul. Sean, how are you today?
Doing great, guys. Thanks for having me. And, that game last night was not a sight to behold. I'll tell you that much.
No, it wasn't. But it was, you know, it was a little bit for Mountain West Conference fans. I mean, after all,
other
than the Aztecs, the Mountain West had been 0-11 in the previous, whatever, you know, 4 or 5 years. So for the Mountain West to get a nice win over that's a third place team from the ACC. I don't know what that says about the rest of the ACC, but I guess we'll find out going forward. All right, let's start, Sean. I ask you about, you know, Boise State and Colorado tonight and take a little look at some of the other matchups. But let's start with the Aztecs and their draw. UAB in the first round. This is not metrically one of the best teams in the tournament. As a matter of fact, I think their net is actually lower than all of the 13 seeds, let alone being the lowest among the 12 seeds. So did the Aztecs truly get a beneficial draw here, or is that window dressing?
Honestly, for the way that San Diego State plays, I think this matchup was one of the worst 12 seeds they could have gotten.
Really?
Because
okay.
San Diego State, or UAB, has a ton of size. They play, honestly, more of an old-school style with the way this year's roster is built. They have Yaxel Lendenborg, who is a big man, double-double machine. He's been one of the better bigs in the country over the last couple months. And you have Javian Davis, who used to play at the high major level at Mississippi State and Alabama. Those two play together a lot, 6'9", 265 for Davis, 6'9", 230 for Lendenborg. They just have so much size up front. And if you're trying to stop Jaden Ledee, you have to have some size up front to stop that man. He was an All-American for a reason. But what it comes down to for UAB is they're going to have to be able to hit a couple perimeter shots. They're a really bad shooting team, 33% from deep. Eric Gaines, Alejandro Vasquez, Buddha Johnson, all three of those guys are – Buddha Johnson's a shooter of the bunch, but Eric Gaines and Vasquez are more defenders and more on-ball defenders that can cause havoc. And they're both athletic. They're both strong. They can be really good for this team. But they're just not shooters. So it's going to be a pretty low-scoring game in my mind. UAB's defense is pretty poor, but they will be able to flash a lot of different looks at you. And I think their defense is a little bit better than the numbers would indicate just based on the raw talent they have. But San Diego State, I mean, I talked about it last time. Those guards have to score because if you're putting everything on Jaden Ledee's plate, at some point he's not going to have a good game. You're going to need Lamont Butler to score. You're going to need Darion Trammell to score. You're going to need Micah Parrish to score. You need somebody to score the basketball outside of Jaden Ledee, and we'll see who that is, but they need somebody to do it.
Talking to Sean Paul of the Field of 68 here on 97.3 The Fan. And real quick, did you say his name was Buddha Johnson?
Yeah, Buddha. His real name is Ephraim, but he goes by Buddha.
Okay, that's a pretty cool nickname, I gotta say. If you're named Buddha as a basketball player,
I bet he's smooth.
I bet he is. But we had a writer on yesterday, and he was talking about the team and how, you know, they, as you said, might not be the best team in the tournament, but they could still do some damage. Do the Aztecs have the upper hand in regards to the bench? Because throughout the year, the bench has been a big thing for the team, and I feel like the bench could be the aspect that helps them win the game.
I mean, definitely. When you look at UAB, they want to play a lot of size. They really only go about 8 or 9 guys deep at most. Christian Coleman and Javian Davis kind of swap around at that 4 spot a little bit. You get some more athleticism and versatility with Coleman. I think that could actually work decently well in this game, depending on how the foul situation sets up, because Jaden Ledee draws fouls better than anybody not named Zach Edey in the country. So I think Coleman could see a steady diet in this game, especially with Jay Powell. They're very similar in the way they're built. But they bring Daniel Ortiz and Tony, another great name with Tony coming off the bench.
Tony.
That, yeah.
Sounds
yeah,
like great names here. Over here.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's funny.
Those are two guys that can shoot it. So I'd like to see a little bit more of them than we typically do, to be honest with you. But yeah, this isn't the most talented team in the field. They're probably one of the least talented 12 seeds in the field. But just the way this team is built, it scares me a little bit for the way San Diego State plays, because you want to face a team that doesn't have a litany of big men, and they have just that.
Yeah. Well, almost anything scares me if I'm San Diego State right now, because the Aztecs don't shoot the ball well, and they don't rebound great on the defensive glass, and that is where UAB makes its hay. So I definitely
one of the best in the country.
Yeah, no question. The Aztecs are going to have their work cut out for them, but just for fun, let's look ahead at their draw. I mean, they made an amazing, you know, run last year. Nobody saw that coming. We can dream a little, can't we? Let's say they beat UAB. Is Auburn too good in the second round? I've seen that. Now, their metrics are off the charts. They are way up there in defensive efficiency, offensive efficiency. I've seen nothing but, you know, great reviews on Auburn. And then if they are able to get past that, they're going to have UConn. I know the Aztecs beat the number one seed last year, Alabama, but UConn seems like a whole nother animal.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. UConn is the best team in the country by a lot, in my opinion. they just have so many different options on the offensive end. All five starters average double digits. They can defend. They can just go on a 10-0 run faster than anybody in the country and in a blink of an eye just change the entire game. They did it twice during the Big East tournament. This is the best team in the country. They've only lost a couple times all year, and they've just looked impressive all year long. But Auburn, you mentioned as well in the potential second-round matchup, again, they have a big-time stud big in Jahni Broome. They have Jalen Williams, who's another awesome piece. So San Diego State's interior is really good, but that's going to be tested in the potential first two-round matchups. But I wouldn't sleep on Yale in that first-round matchup against Auburn either. Yale is a pretty good team. They have a lot of size for an Ivy League team with seven-footer Danny Wolf and Matt Noling, who made the game winner against Brown in the Ivy League title game. They have a really good point guard in Bez Embang, who I think is better than any point guard Auburn has on their roster, which is my big concern about them. They're very similar to San Diego State in the fact that they have a really good front court, but the guard play is really shaky, and that's why I don't think either team will make a super deep run in the tournament, although the metrics absolutely love Auburn. So you can draw some parallels to UConn being super beloved by the metrics last year and being a four seed, same deal for Auburn. I just don't think Auburn is nearly as good as that UConn team last year. But I could see San Diego State getting past Auburn if they beat UAB. I could see it. I don't know if I would predict it, but I could see it. There's a world where that could happen. I don't think San Diego State's going to make the Sweet 16 this year, though.
That's fair. That is fair, Sean.
I think it's fair. I just, you know, don't mind. If you don't mind being wrong, it's fair.
Hey, I'd love to be wrong. I love this program and what Dutcher has. Just the guards, they just don't do it enough. Because last year you had Bradley, at least, who at least set the tone. And I know we didn't have a huge season last year compared to the previous year. But against Charleston and FAU, their two closest games of the tournament before the title game, who was there saving the day for San Diego State? Matt Bradley.
Yep, that's true. We're talking to Sean Paul, Field of 68 here, and I got a side question before my actual question. Do you just memorize everything about basketball?
It's pretty unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
He's ripping off these names. It's left and right.
Like,
it's
there's incredible. No way you're sitting in front of your computer doing this. This is coming off the top of your head.
I'm not in front of my computer now.
I know. How do you do this?
I love this. I love this stuff.
I watch a lot of basketball. I study a lot of basketball. I don't know. If I was as good at memorizing math equations as I am at memorizing college basketball players, I would have been a lot better in school. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case.
Yeah. You and me both,
but,
Sean.
I'm great at memorizing basketball.
You and me both.
So we were just talking about upsets and different teams that could do some things in the tournament. And here's the million-dollar question that everybody wants to know. Who's the upset that they should be picking in their bracket?
It's a great question. I think right now Stanford is a trendy one over Kansas with Kevin McCullough being out, but I don't love the way that Stanford's built against high major teams. They don't have a ton of size to really battle against Hunter Dickinson. They have two good big men at the Chora Chora and Jermaine Marshall. Those are two really good Southern Conference big men, but both are really wings playing the four and five. I don't think they'll fare very well against Kansas because the way Kansas doesn't turn the ball over, Stanford pressures a ton. They have a small backcourt and they shoot a ton of threes. I just don't think that's going to work against Kansas. But Grand Canyon over St. Mary's is the one I really dug my heels into at this point. I think they're a really good team. They're more athletic than St. Mary's, and obviously St. Mary's is really good. They have two great guards with Augustus Marshallonis, Aiden Mahaney. They're a great defensive team, but their offense can leave a little bit to be desired at times. They ran through the WCC this season. But when you look at Grand Canyon, I mean, they really good team. Did they beat San Diego State this year? They played, right?
Yeah, they beat the Aztecs rather handily down there. Yeah, they were good.
Yeah, I thought that was coming to my mind correctly. Ty and Grant Foster, one of the best players in this tournament. He's just an absolute stud. He's an NBA player. Grand Canyon's a really good offensive rebounding team. They have a lot of offensive weapons like Ray Harrison, Javon Blackshear. They just have so many dudes that can beat you. They're more athletic than St. Mary's. I think it'll be a Grand Canyon victory.
Well, there's something to go along with that pick of Grand Canyon is that on my bracket, I have St. Mary's going quite a ways, and I'm not very good in brackets. So,
Nor am I.
So, well, you know, that's just something for you people out there to keep in mind. Maybe Grand Canyon is one of those really good choices. Couple things. We had the 15s beat the 2s last year. We've got Purdue in this tournament. They've lost, you know, to double-digit seeds, it seems like, every year. Are we going to get one of those crazy tournaments again this year, Sean, or is it going to at least get a little bit back to semi-normal?
I mean, I don't think so, but at the same time, like, if I was, I could just be like, hey, St. Peter's going to win it again, guys, but I'd just be lying to you because I don't think it's going to happen. I didn't think Princeton was going to win a game last year either. I didn't think St. Peter's was going to beat Kentucky. I thought St. Peter's would cover the 21.5-point spread or whatever it was against Kentucky. I didn't think they'd win. But Oral Roberts over Ohio State, I did actually predict that one, and that got me a lot of Twitter followers a good 3 years ago. But it's just, you're really just guessing if you have a 15 or a 16 seed over a 1 or a 2 seed, because the odds of it happening are just so slim. Obviously, it can happen, and you look at some of these 16 seeds, there's some talent there last night. I mean, it was a really good game by Wagner, but they play 7 guys. Like, that's not a formula to win against a 1 seed. Then you have Montana State and Grambling State. They play tonight. I don't think either of those two teams are going to win a game as a 16. Stetson, I think, is the most talented 16 seed out there, and they play UConn. Like, that's just a terrible matchup. Yeah. But Jalen Blackman, if you're looking for a guard who can really go, he scored 43 points in the A-Sun title game. He is one of the best guard scorers in the country. Stephon Swenson right next to him, that's a really good guard duo, but they're playing UConn. They're not going to win that game. So you can still find things to enjoy about these games, but odds are they're probably not going to win.
We're talking to Sean Paul, Field of 68 here, and my last question is very simple. Where can people go to find your thoughts, find your articles, and what's your Twitter handle?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter, at SeanPaulCBB, to see all of the NCAA tournament thoughts I have and tweeting about random transfers, because everybody is entering the transfer portal nowadays. So maybe San Diego State will get a couple of them.
We probably will. I want to ask you one more thing before I let you go. I mean, I told everybody before you came on, I said, this guy's really knowledgeable, so get your brackets out. And you have done nothing to change my mind, Sean. I mean, I can't believe the in-depth knowledge you have. The one thing that people are saying this year is that UConn, Houston, and Purdue, those three, are just better than everybody. Do you have all three of them being able to get to the Final Four, or are they likely to run into some problems somewhere? I know you don't think UConn will. What about the other two?
That's a great question. Well, I'll just say my pick here. I have UConn winning the whole thing. I know that's a very chalk pick these days, but that's just the best team I've seen this year. I've watched a lot of UConn because they're just that fun to watch. They're the best team I've seen. I'm perfectly okay being wrong if they're not going to win at all. But the other two, I have Houston going down in the round of 32. I know that's a very unpopular opinion, but I could air my thoughts on them real fast. Their defense is elite, like always. Kelvin Sampson's a great coach, but I've said for months, what's going to happen to Houston when L.J. Cryer and Jamal Shedd have an off-scoring night? And we saw exactly what happens in that situation against Iowa State. They were completely outmatched by a really good Iowa State team as a 2-seed. Probably should have been a 1-seed, in my opinion. But they got completely outmatched because they don't have enough scoring outside of those two. They need those two to combine for 40 points in a game if they're going to win that game against a high-level team. I have Texas A&M taking them down in the round of 32. For me, it just comes down to the lack of scoring options, and they are just so depleted right now, which isn't the style that Kelvin Sampson wants his teams to have. He likes having a ton of depth, but Juwan Roberts is shaken up right now. He should play, I assume. He played in the conference title game, but I don't think he's 100%. You're down 3 rotation players. Houston's just not as good as the other two teams, in my opinion. I think it's UConn and Purdue, and then a decently sized gap between Houston and the other two. Okay. I don't think Houston's going to make a deep run. I just don't see it this year. Purdue, I have making it to, I think, the Elite Eight and losing. Obviously, they can win it all, too. But I think UConn is the best of that bunch by a pretty clear margin.
Well, Sean, I'm a lot smarter about the tournament than I was 20 minutes ago. Thanks for great insight. Let's catch up to you again, and we'll preview the Aztec Sweet 16 matchup against UConn, the one that you don't think is going to happen.
Title rematch? All right, I'm down for that. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. Why not? Hey, we owe them from last year. We appreciate it, Sean. Thanks. Great stuff. Gravy's alma mater, one of your many alma maters.
Oh, I was like, which one?
Colorado State Rams, my wife's alma mater. They win the first game of the tournament for the Mountain West Conference last night, as we talked about yesterday. Any win that the Mountain West gets is good for the Aztecs. Even though we're used to rooting against those teams during the season, we need to root for them now. It will help down the road.
It will.
And it also helps in the pocketbook. That's $2 million more dollars to the teams in the Mountain West Conference. Every time a team wins a game, ching ching, a couple more million.
Ching, I think is what
or
you're looking
ching. What'd I say? Ching ching?
Ching ching.
Yeah, well, you know. But no, I want to also congratulate both Colorado State and Virginia they set the game back by about 30 years. If you watched the first half of that game last night, it was a struggle.
I did.
It was an absolute struggle. The shooting for both teams was abysmal. Virginia at one point missed 19 shots in a row. They went over 11 minutes without a basket. And
it's pretty bad.
I would think Colorado State would win that game. Now, of course, all the pundits after the game are like, we told Virginia shouldn't have been in the tournament. All right, fine.
Easy to say now.
But how about a little credit to Colorado State? They played a terrific game. They didn't give a whole lot to Virginia. They didn't give them anything on the offensive glass. And, you know, they forced them into difficult shots. And Colorado State, I mean, having watched this team as much as we have, Isaiah Stevens is like one of the best players out there. This guy scored 5 points last night.
And they still won
by 25.
That's impressive.
Pretty impressive. So with that, we bring in our NCAA basketball guru from the field of 68. Joining us on Gwen and Chris is our friend Sean Paul. Sean, how are you today?
Doing great, guys. Thanks for having me. And, that game last night was not a sight to behold. I'll tell you that much.
No, it wasn't. But it was, you know, it was a little bit for Mountain West Conference fans. I mean, after all,
for sure.
Other than the Aztecs, the Mountain West had been 0-11 in the previous, whatever, you know, four or five years. So for the Mountain West to get a nice win over that's a third place team from the ACC. I don't know what that says about the rest of the ACC, but I guess we'll find out going forward. All right, let's start, Sean. I ask you about, you know, Boise State and Colorado tonight and take a little look at some of the other matchups. But let's start with the Aztecs and their draw. UAB in the first round. This is not metrically one of the best teams in the tournament. As a matter of fact, I think their net is actually lower than all of the 13 seeds, let alone being the lowest among the 12 seeds. So did the Aztecs truly get a beneficial draw here, or is that window dressing?
Honestly, for the way that San Diego State plays, I think this matchup was one of the worst 12 seeds they could have gotten.
Really?
Because San Diego State, or UAB, has a ton of size. They play, honestly, more of an old-school style with the way this year's roster is built. They have Yaxel Lendenborg, who is a big man, double-double machine. He's been one of the better bigs in the country over the last couple months. And you have Javian Davis, who used to play at the high major level at Mississippi State and Alabama. Those two play together a lot, 6'9", 265 for Davis, 6'9", 230 for Lendenborg. They just have so much size up front. And if you're trying to stop Jaden Ledee, you have to have some size up front to stop that man. He was an All-American for a reason. But what it comes down to for UAB is they're going to have to be able to hit a couple perimeter shots. They're a really bad shooting team, 33% from deep. Eric Gaines, Alejandro Vasquez, Buddha Johnson, all three of those guys are – Buddha Johnson's a shooter of the bunch, but Eric Gaines and Vasquez are more defenders, are more on-ball defenders that can cause havoc. And they're both athletic. They're both strong. They can be really good for this team. But they're just not shooters. So it's going to be a pretty low-scoring game in my mind. UAB's defense is pretty poor, but they will be able to flash a lot of different looks at you. And I think their defense is a little bit better than the numbers would indicate just based on the raw talent they have. But San Diego State, I mean, I talked about it last time. Those guards have to score because if you're putting everything on Jaden Ledee's plate, at some point he's not going to have a good game. You're going to need Lamont Butler to score. You're going to need Darion Trammell to score. You're going to need Micah Parrish to score. You need somebody to score the basketball outside of Jaden Ledee, and we'll see who that is, but they need somebody to do it.
Talking to Sean Paul of the Field of 68 here on 97.3 The Fan. And real quick, did you say his name was Buddha Johnson?
Yeah, Buddha. His real name is Ephraim, but he goes by Buddha.
Okay, that's a pretty cool nickname, I got to say, if you're named Buddha as a basketball player.
I bet he's smooth.
I bet he is. But we had a writer on yesterday, and he was talking about the team and how, you know, they, as you said, might not be the best team in the tournament, but they could still do some damage. Do the Aztecs have the upper hand in regards to the bench? Because throughout the year, the bench has been a big thing for the team, and I feel like the bench could be the aspect that helps them win the game.
I mean, definitely. When you look at UAB, they want to play a lot of size. They really only go about 8 or 9 guys deep at most. Christian Coleman and Javian Davis kind of swap around at that 4 spot a little bit. You get some more athleticism and versatility with Coleman. I think that could actually work decently well in this game, depending on how the foul situation sets up, because Jaden Ledee draws fouls better than anybody not named Zach Edey in the country. So I think Coleman could see a steady diet in this game, especially with Jay Powell. They're very similar in the way they're built. But they bring Daniel Ortiz and Tony, another great name with Tony coming off the bench.
Tony.
Yeah.
Sounds like our great names here.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's funny.
Those are two guys that can shoot it. So I'd like to see a little bit more of them than we typically do, to be honest with you. But yeah, this isn't the most talented team in the field. They're probably one of the least talented 12 seeds in the field. But just the way this team is built, it scares me a little bit for the way San Diego State plays, because you want to face a team that doesn't have a litany of big men, and they have just that.
Yeah. Well, almost anything scares me if I'm San Diego State right now, because the Aztecs don't shoot the ball well, and they don't rebound great on the defensive glass, and that is where UAB makes its hay. So I definitely,
one of the best in the country.
Yeah, no question. The Aztecs are going to have their work cut out for them, but just for fun, let's look ahead at their draw. I mean, they made an amazing, you know, run last year. Nobody saw that coming. We can dream a little, can't we? Let's say they beat UAB. Is Auburn too good in the second round? I've seen that. Now, their metrics are off the charts. They are way up there in defensive efficiency, offensive efficiency. I've seen nothing but, you know, great reviews on Auburn. And then if they're able to get past that, they're going to have UConn. I know the Aztecs beat the number one seed last year, Alabama, but UConn seems like a whole nother animal.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. UConn is the best team in the country by a lot, in my opinion. They just have so many different options on the offensive end. All five starters average double digits. They can defend. They can just go on a 10-0 run faster than anybody in the country, and in a blink of an eye, just change the entire game. They did it twice during the Big East tournament. This is the best team in the country. They've only lost a couple times all year, and they've just looked impressive all year long. But Auburn, you mentioned as well, in the potential second-round matchup, again, they have a big-time stud big in Jani Broom. They have Jalen Williams, who's another awesome piece. So San Diego State's interior is really good, but that's going to be tested in the potential first two-round matchups. But I wouldn't sleep on Yale in that first-round matchup against Auburn either. Yale is a pretty good team. They have a lot of size for an Ivy League team with 7-footer Danny Wolfe and Matt Noling, who made the game winner against Brown in the Ivy League title game. They have a really good point guard in Bez Embang, who I think is better than any point guard Auburn has on their roster, which is my big concern about them. They're very similar to San Diego State in the fact that they have a really good front court, but the guard play is really shaky, and that's why I don't think either team will make a super deep run in the tournament, although the metrics absolutely love Auburn, so you can draw some parallels to UConn being super beloved by the metrics last year and being a 4 seed, same deal for Auburn. I just don't think Auburn is nearly as good as that UConn team last year. But I could see San Diego State getting past Auburn if they beat UAB. I could see it. I don't know if I would predict it, but I could see it. There's a world where that could happen. I don't think San Diego State's going to make the Sweet 16 this year, though.
That's fair. That is fair, Sean.
I think it's fair. I just, you know, if you don't mind being wrong, it's fair.
Hey, I'd love to be wrong. I love this program and what Dutcher has. Just the guards, they just don't do it enough.
They haven't.
Because last year he had Bradley, at least set the tone. And I know he didn't have a huge season last year compared to the previous year. But against Charleston and FAU, their two closest games of the tournament before the title game, who was there saving the day for San Diego State? Matt Bradley.
Yep, that's true. We're talking to Sean Paul, Field of 68 here, and I got a side question before my actual question. Do you just memorize everything about basketball?
It's pretty unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
He's ripping off these names. It's left and right.
Like, there's
incredible.
No way you're sitting in front of your computer doing this. This is coming off the top of your head.
I'm not sitting in front of my computer, no.
I know. How do you do this?
I love this stuff.
I watch a lot of basketball. I study a lot of basketball. I don't know. If I was as good at memorizing math equations as I am at memorizing college basketball players, I would have been a lot better in school. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case.
Yeah. You and me both,
but,
Sean.
I'm great at memorizing basketball.
You and me both.
So we were just talking about upsets and different teams that could do some things in the tournament. And here's the million-dollar question that everybody wants to know. Who's the upset that they should be picking in their bracket?
It's a great question. I think right now Samford is a trendy one over Kansas with Kevin McCullough being out, but I don't love the way that Samford's built against high major teams. They don't have a ton of size to really battle against Hunter Dickinson. They have two good big men at the Chora Chora and Jermaine Marshall. Those are two really good Southern Conference big men, but both are really wings playing the 4 and 5. I don't think they'll fare very well against Kansas because the way Kansas doesn't turn the ball over. Samford pressures a ton. They have a small backcourt, and they shoot a ton of threes. I just don't think that's going to work against Kansas. But Grand Canyon over St. Mary is the one I've really dug my heels into at this point. I think they're a really good team. They're more athletic than St. Mary's, and obviously St. Mary's is really good. They have two great guards with Augustus Marshallonis, Aiden Mahaney. They're a great defensive team, but their offense can leave a little bit to be desired at times. They ran through the WCC this season. But when you look at Grand Canyon, I mean, they're a really good team. Did they beat San Diego State this year? Or
They
played, right?
Yeah, they beat the Aztecs rather handily down there. Yeah, they were good.
Yeah, I thought that was coming to my mind correctly. Ty and Grant Foster, one of the best players in this tournament. He's just an absolute stud. He's an NBA player. Grand Canyon is a really good offensive rebounding team. They have a lot of offensive weapons like Ray Harrison, Javon Blackshear. They just have so many dudes that can beat you. They're more athletic than St. Mary's. I think it'll be a Grand Canyon victory.
Well, there's something to go along with that pick of Grand Canyon is that on my bracket, I have St. Mary's going quite a ways, and I'm not very good in brackets. So,
Nor am I.
So, well, you know, that's just something for you people out there to keep in mind. Maybe Grand Canyon is one of those really good choices. Couple things. We had the 15s beat the 2s last year. We've got Purdue in this tournament. They've lost, you know, to double-digit seeds, it seems like, every year. Are we going to get one of those crazy tournaments again this year, Sean, or is it going to at least get a little bit back to semi-normal?
I mean, I don't think so, but at the same time, like, if I was, I could just be like, hey, St. Peter's is going to win it again, guys, but I'd just be lying to you because I don't think it's going to happen. I didn't think Princeton was going to win a game last year either. I didn't think St. Peter's was going to beat Kentucky. I thought St. Peter's would cover the 21.5-point spread or whatever it was against Kentucky. I didn't think they'd win. But Oral Roberts over Ohio State, I did actually predict that one, and that got me a lot of Twitter followers a good 3 years ago. But it's just, you're really just guessing if you have a 15 or a 16 seed over a 1 or a 2 seed because the odds of it happening are just so slim. Obviously, it can happen, and you look at some of these 16 seeds, there's some talent there last night. I mean, it was a really good game by Wagner, but they play 7 guys. Like, that's not a formula to win against a 1 seed. Then you have Montana State and Grambling State. They play tonight. I don't think either of those two teams are going to win a game as a 16. Stetson, I think, is the most talented 16 seed out there, and they play UConn. Like, that's just a terrible matchup. But yeah. Jalen Blackman, if you're looking for a guard who can really go, he scored 43 points in the A-Sun title game. He is one of the best guard scorers in the country. Stephon Swenson right next to him, that's a really good guard duo, but they're playing UConn. They're not going to win that game. So you can still find things to enjoy about these games, but odds are they're probably not going to win.
We're talking to Sean Paul, Field of 68 here, and my last question is very simple. Where can people go to find your thoughts, find your articles, and what's your Twitter handle?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter, at SeanPaulCBB, to see all of the NCAA tournament thoughts I have, and tweeting about random transfers because everybody is entering the transfer portal nowadays. So maybe San Diego State will get a couple of them.
We probably will. I want to ask you one more thing before I let you go. I mean, I told everybody before you came on, I said, this guy's really knowledgeable. So get your brackets out. And you have done nothing to change my mind, Sean. I mean, I can't believe the in-depth knowledge you have. The one thing that people are saying this year is that UConn, Houston and Purdue, those three, are just better than everybody. Do you have all three of them being able to get to the Final Four, or are they likely to run into some problems somewhere? I know you don't think UConn will. What about the other two?
That's a great question. Well, I'll just say my pick here. I have UConn winning the whole thing. I know that's a very chalk pick these days, but that's just the best team I've seen this year. I've watched a lot of UConn because they're just that fun to watch. They're the best team I've seen. I'm perfectly okay being wrong if they're not going to win at all. But the other two, I have Houston going down in the round of 32. I know that's a very unpopular opinion, but I could air my thoughts on them real fast. Their defense is elite, like always. Kelvin Sampson's a great coach, but I've said for months, what's going to happen to Houston when LJ Cryer and Jamal Shedd have an off-scoring night? And we saw exactly what happens in that situation against Iowa State. They were completely outmatched by a really good Iowa State team as a 2-seed. Probably should have been a 1-seed in my opinion, but they got completely outmatched because they don't have enough scoring outside of those two. They need those two to combine for 40 points in a game if they're going to win that game against a high-level team. I have Texas A&M taking them down in the round of 32. for me, it just comes down to the lack of scoring options, and they are just so depleted right now, which isn't the style that Kelvin Sampson wants his teams to have. He likes having a ton of depth, but Juwan Roberts is shaken up right now. He should play, I assume. He played in the conference title game, but I don't think he's 100%. You're down three rotation players. Houston's just not as good as the other two teams, in my opinion. I think it's UConn and Purdue, and then a decently sized gap between Houston and the other two.
Okay.
I don't think Houston's going to make a deep run. I just don't see it this year. Purdue, I have making it to, I think, the Elite Eight and losing. Obviously, they can win it all, too. But I think UConn is the best of that bunch by a pretty clear margin.
Well, Sean, I'm a lot smarter about the tournament than I was 20 minutes ago. Thanks for great insight. Let's catch up to you again, and we'll preview the Aztec Sweet 16 matchup against UConn, the one that you don't think is going to happen.
Title rematch? All right, I'm down for that. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. Why not? Hey, we owe them from last year. We appreciate it, Sean. Thanks. Great stuff as always. Again, give us the Twitter thing, and it's the Field of 68, the website that people can follow. Because the rest of the guys are just as smart as you are. So tell us again.
Twitter at Sean Paul CBB and the Field of 68. I believe it's just at the Field of 68. Nightly show every night with a bunch of really smart college basketball minds. And they'll be going live again tonight. So make sure you pay attention to that. The Field of 68 daily, a written version of everything you need to know about college basketball. Subscribe to that newsletter. You can find all that information on the Field of 68's Twitter. And I believe it's on mine as well.
Awesome. Wow. Great stuff, Sean. We really enjoyed it. Thanks again.
Sean.
We'll still talk to you again. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, have a good one, guys.
There you go. Sean Paul from the Field of 68. All right. Well, I have St. Mary's in my bracket going to the Final Four.
Yes.
He thinks they're going to lose in the first game.
Yes.
I have Houston in my bracket winning it all.
Yes.
He thinks they're going to be out in the second game.
Yes. Your bracket's on point.
Should I just crumple it up now?
No. Your bracket's on point, and the best part is crossing those teams out.
Well, he's pretty smart. He's a lot smarter than I am. We'll see how it all turns out. More Gwen and Chris coming up. We got a daily gambit ahead. One of the two of us is hot, picking these games.
Hot.
So we'll do some more of that when we return. Hour number two, Gwen and Chris coming up.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.